Hello, everyone, and thanks for giving us your time today for VR Download. Each week, we meet in virtual reality using the latest technologies to discuss the next generation of personal computing. My name is Ian Hamilton, and I'm in the United States, joined by my colleague David Heaney from Northern Ireland. VR brings us together into this broadcast studio where we've got multiple automatic cameras, a TV to show images and videos, and we can see live comments from YouTube on our tablets in front of us. We syndicate VR Download out to all podcast platforms and encourage our audience to become members as we continue charting the next steps in personal computing. Heaney, what do we have today?
I feel like I say this almost every week now, but we really do have a lot to talk about this week. We're going to talk about the details about Quest Pro that weren't revealed in the Kinect keynote. So some of the details that are actually quite important about the product, but for some reason Meta didn't actually mention. We're then going to talk about Valve's job listing, which confirmed work on a new headset, which may be codenamed Deckard. We'll talk about HTC teasing on Twitter through kind of very vague images, a potential Quest 2 and Pico 4 competitor, potentially. And finally, we will talk about Pico 4. If you go to uploadvr.com now, you can see my full written review. We aim to have a video review later in the week. And at the end of the show, like I said, we'll be talking about it. And if you've got any questions, save them for the end of the show, and we will be answering them in a large section about Pico 4.
Yeah, very, very big news week. Hello to our viewers, Adam Hartzell and other members. Let's see if there's anyone else here that is a member. Hello, it's Bradley. Thank you for tuning in. I'm also seeing viewers in from Sweden and Hungary. Love seeing our global audience out there. Please sound off in the comments if you can share the country that you're watching us from today. That is the true power of VR, is being able to cross very large distances very quickly. Heaney, why don't we get into those Quest Pro details? Lots of tidbits you have been all over for the last week. Why don't you run through some of this stuff?
Yeah, so if you've been living under a virtual rock, Quest Pro is the first in Meta's high-end product line. It has sharper, wider field of view lenses, a slimmer visor, eye tracking, face tracking, higher resolution color pass-through, and self-tracking controllers when compared to Quest 2. But as I mentioned at the start, there was quite a lot of details revealed in the developer talks and in other places that weren't in the keynote, so we're going to talk about them now.
Yeah, we've got some interesting comments already coming in. Oh, what happened with my controller? My controller decided to come alive in a really weird way just then. I'm seeing commenters talk about the light blocker that's not included in the Quest Pro. That is a very big deal, a very different product category. This is a mixed reality device. And some very big things that are going to be different and that we've learned over the course of the last week about this device. The one big one that I was thinking about, Heaney, I was looking, let's see if I've got this video up here. Yeah, I've got this video to show. Let's talk about co-location real quick. So this video was at the last Kinect conference, assuming it starts playing, that I was able to see this at in a live setting. So this was co-location shown at Oculus Kinect when it was still, I think, called Oculus Kinect. I think it was all the way back in 2018. And it's taken this long for this feature actually to arrive in shipping VR hardware. What's the significance of this feature, Heaney?
Yeah, as you say, this was first teased in late 2018 in this experience. It is now going to be shipping soon to Quest 2 and Quest Pro. And what this means is that if you have multiple headsets or if your friend has a headset, you'll be able to play certain games that developers add specific support for this feature to in the same physical space. So if you have a large warehouse you have access to, or even if you have a garage or you have a large yard at maybe the right kind of lighting, you'll be able to play co-located in the same space. And this is particularly important for mixed reality because, as Ian just mentioned, Quest Pro is as much a mixed reality headset as it is a virtual reality headset. And as commenters are rightly pointing out, you actually need to buy a $50 accessory to get the full VR light blocking. So yeah, co-location, you can see an example of it in this video in mixed reality, and we'll have to give it a try as soon as it ships.
Yeah, Space Pirate Arena is the big one that I've was such a cool thing, but it's such a kind of an effort to align your environments up for two people to play a game of Space Pirate Arena in that huge, huge setting. Now that whole setup process can get a lot easier. I did reach out to the developers of Space Pirate Arena to find out if that's coming, and I think they're going to look at it. It's going to be a whole process of actually integrating it. But they were obviously very, very early to the game in trying to get that feature up and running as quickly as possible. Yeah. But now it potentially gets a lot better.
Yeah, as you said, and as Chris Richardson in the comments pointing out, this is something the developers have already been able to do manually. Space Pirate Arena does it manually, where you touch the same location with your touch controller. But the difference here is that this is coming as part of a feature called Shared Spatial Anchors. So you won't have to do a manual calibration, theoretically. Just like on AR Kit and AR Core on smartphone AR today, the headsets should share mapping details such that the content will be aligned without that extra effort. And this is something that's actually already a feature of HTC's Vive Focus 3, their $1,300 business headset, and it's used in VR arcades. There are arcades that have gone from requiring a bulky, expensive backpack PC and dozens of OptiTrack cameras on the roof to literally just using the Vive Focus 3 and streaming from PCs in the back. So to see this come to the consumer space is going to be great. Obviously, in the medium term or even, you know, the short term, it's not everyone. In fact, most people will not have someone who also owns a headset and a large open space to play this kind of content. But for the people that do have that, it's still nice to see.
Let's talk about a couple big things that we're able to confirm before most other places out there regarding battery life. Hini, why don't you talk about battery life with Quest Pro?
So there's two aspects to this. There's the battery life of the headset and the battery life of the controllers. Meta's official spec sheet says that the battery life of the headset is 1 to 2 hours. But if you watched John Carmack's Unscripted Talk, you'll note that he said that Quest Pro actually has a larger battery than Quest 2. And here's his exact quote. He says, "It's got a larger battery. If you use it just like a Quest 2 without engaging any of the new features, you know it should last longer." And so those new features, as I mentioned at the start, are the face tracking, the eye tracking, and the color pass-through. So eye tracking and face tracking are actually optional on Quest Pro for privacy reasons. If you do disable them, you'll miss out on features like eye-tracked foveated rendering, and your avatar won't show your facial expression. We'll talk a little bit more about foveated rendering in a bit. But theoretically, if you were then to also avoid using color pass-through apps, you should get better battery life than that 1 to 2 hours. This is something we will be testing in our review, but it's possible that the situation here is that if you use this thing like a Quest 2, you actually would get similar or better battery life. Although the obvious caveat there is, would you really want to spend $1,500 just to get a, you know, slimmer Quest 2 with better lenses and self-track controllers?
What a fantastic transition there, Hini, to the next subject, which is multitasking. So we were able to find out that there's actually a pretty significant feature included in Quest Pro that really didn't get talked about at all in the keynote. And it was a head-scratching moment for me that they wouldn't kind of make this a marquee feature that they talked about right up front, because in my view, this is a system seller. Why don't you walk through that, Hini?
So on Quest 2 today, when you're in the system home environment, you can bring up three virtual monitors, one in front of you, one to the left, and one to the right. Three virtual web browsers, I should say. But the problem is that if you're inside a VR app and you want to go into the web browser, you actually have to close the currently running VR app and return to the system home environment. And that is far from ideal if you want to do something like look up a walkthrough for a game, or even just check messages or Discord or any of the typical reasons you would want to check browser while playing a regular 2D game on your PC or console. But with Quest Pro, because it has double the RAM, 12 gigabytes over Quest 2's 6 gigabytes, it supports opening the web browser inside VR. But there is a caveat here. You can't keep it open while you're interacting with a game. It will only be open while you're on the menu. You go back into the game, you have to minimize the web browser, but it doesn't completely close it. So you can still kind of press the system menu button and bring it back up again. It's a small but significant step towards true multitasking in VR and VR headsets becoming general purpose computers. We forgot to talk about the controller battery life. So this was the most controversial of all. Rumors had spread around that the battery life of the Quest Touch Pro controllers, as Meta calls them, was only 1 to 2 hours, the same as the headset. So because you could actually plug in a USB-C battery to the headset, its battery life isn't as much of a concern as the controllers. And had that rumor been true, this would have been a pretty limited product in that you could only use it for that duration of time. However, that rumor is almost certainly not true. We reached out to Meta and asked, and they said that the battery life of these controllers is up to 8 hours, depending on your usage. When VR headset manufacturers, or I should say VR controller manufacturers, say depending on your usage, they're almost always referring to the fact that haptic feedback will drain the battery more quickly than not using it. So if you're in a game that's constantly running the haptic motors, you'll maybe get less than 8 hours. But all of Meta's headsets so far have had very impressive controller battery life. So I don't have any reason at this time to doubt the 8 hour figure, but of course it will be something we test in our review.
So let's go back to the multitasking question real quick, because we're seeing a couple key questions here that really do go to the core of how the function works, right? So Barra asking, can I paint while watching Bob Ross videos on YouTube? And Marcellus asking, can you play a video or music and then play the game? So I just want to point out, Real VR Fishing has this feature right now in Real VR Fishing as a one-off app where you're just casting your line out into the water, reeling it in, and you have a YouTube video up there in the corner, wherever you want to place the window, and you can have that experience of multitasking, even playing, I think, music from the headset, and have that wonderful experience. Heaney, this is not that, at least not yet, right?
Correct, yeah. At current, like I said, to get back into the game and start interacting with it, you have to minimize the web browser. So you can't, for example, have YouTube open because the web browser is now minimized. To answer another question here, Birdie Blob asks, can you see a real keyboard with Quest Pro? You already can with Quest 2. There's a limited number of keyboards that are supported, but the same is supported on Quest Pro, and there are indications found by, I believe, Basti, but I can't remember exactly who, that Quest Pro is going to add support for a much wider range of keyboards, and there's no reason to doubt that Meta will over time do this. If you're doing that, you will then, yes, see the keyboard when you're in the system menu so that you can type a lot faster in the browser than using the laser pointers. Onikazi pointing out that if you sideload Spotify, you can play music in the background. Yeah, but you can't have the visual Spotify open while you're inside a VR app. Just the music.
But here's the, going back to that question of multitasking, do you think there's enough RAM and overhead in using that RAM and software updates over the life of Quest Pro for us to get there with this multitasking feature? Can the thing that I want, that you want, that our commenters want. I mean, this studio, we talked about it even in our studio. It would be an absolute game changer if I am here in the studio talking to you, you ask me a question, and I can bring up our website browser window or do a quick amount of research while still broadcasting with you and seeing a browser window letting me quote something to you from my research live. It's what everyone wants, but we're not there yet. Do you think we're going to get there with a software update?
Well, we are there in the sense that you can do that. You're going to have the system menu up, just like when I bring the system menu up, if I can remember the gesture here in my hand. Like, I'm in the system menu right now and I'm still able to continue talking. You can still hear me, yeah? So you would just be the same concept, but I know what you're asking. You're asking, when can you pin a YouTube window? I don't think the issue there is RAM. I think it's more likely the fact that the actual CPU and GPU usage of that window would then affect the game, and Meta doesn't want to have a compromised performance. Because yes, this thing has double the RAM, but it, as far as we know, and this is one of the big unknowns about Quest Pro, the processor is the CMXR2, just with the RAM moved from the top to the side so it can support more. So it's not like it has extra power that could be used to simultaneously render a browser and whatever you're using. Obviously, as you say, apps like VR Fishing have their own web browser. We have our own kind of mini web browser that lets us view the comments live. But When developers are building in those features, they budget the performance of their app with that in mind. If you're on something like maybe Red Matter 2 or Resident Evil 4 or any game that's pushing the Quest to its max, if you add a web browser in then, you're going to get stuttering, and that's probably something Meta doesn't want to support. But I'm optimistic that they will release some sort of API for developers to very easily integrate web browsers into their apps.
Yeah, we've got a question here asking, are we using Quest Pro yet or now? No, we're not. This is all Heaney's incredible work. If you watched the keynote from John Carmack and even others, but John Carmack's keynote where he broadcast from Horizon Worlds, I really do believe Heaney's done some incredible work with the lip sync here to the audio that, you know, almost, you know, it put a little bit of what we saw in that keynote to shame with the amount of optimization Heaney has done to make this look great, even without face and eye tracking. And obviously, we're going to get to it later in the show, but Heaney has been working his butt off. He's exhausted after assessing, you know, after we worked through all the Kinect news last week, and then he's got the Pico 4 review out now. But obviously, as soon as he gets his hands on Quest Pro, gets that review out, there is going to be hopefully some time over the next couple months to do some work to see what it looks like to get us into this studio from a Pico and from a Quest Pro, and hopefully eventually adding some of those face tracking features into this experience. It's just we've got a limited number of hours that we can work on certain things, and we have to be very rigorous with our prioritization before we get to those things, even though I will beg Heaney for it and get shot down by him repeatedly in the interim. Heaney, what do we got next? Are we ready to talk about the haptics details of the controllers?
Yeah, I think we can talk about haptics and just shout out to Bradley. This really is the VR busy period. October is the hell month for VR. Two major hardware launches and Meta's huge conference where they drop all their news in the same period. It's been a heck of a month so far. And yeah, we will be having a Quest Pro review by the end of the month as well. So the month hasn't ended yet.
Will Meta avatars work on Pico? That's a good question.
We don't know yet. That, again, the problem is that you wouldn't have access to the editor. Even if you can support it, it would be like the current Steam VR support where you can only pick between 12 pre-made avatars. Meta would have to unify properly their avatar editor across Facebook and the Quest platform, which they keep talking about doing, but insofar as I can tell, have not actually done yet.
Wolveraz is saying, I'm kind of wanting the controllers with the new haptics, waiting to hear if accessories are going to get made. And Kevin making the comment, I've actually pre-ordered the Quest Pro, but don't really use the Quest much currently as I just fly in Microsoft Flight Simulator with the G2. That's going to be an interesting comparison to think about with when you compare, like, I mean, it's still not apples to apples. It's apples to oranges comparing a Quest Pro to a tethered VR headset with a PC. That's, you know, that's still an expensive kit. You still have to add the PC and the headset together to get up to what, $3,000 in cost in order to have the flight simulator experience with a Quest Pro. But we will talk about some of Heaney's assessments of the Pico 4 and how that might figure into his PC VR usage going forward. But yeah, let's talk about these haptics that, again, were not in the main presentation, but are a pretty big thing coming to Quest 2 and Quest Pro.
Yeah, as you say, these controllers are going to be sold later this year for $300 to Quest 2 owners. They're not just for Quest Pro, but as we've been alluding to here, and as we published on our website, there are significant details that were not mentioned in Meta's keynote, nor in the spec sheet. The first is three-point haptics, as you would have seen on the screen a few seconds ago. There is a haptic motor in the handle, but there are also specific haptic actuators in the trigger and under the thumb rest being the point that's slightly curved to the side of the buttons. And the thumb rest is actually a force sensor, a pressure sensor. So what that allows is what they're talking about on screen right now, or, you know, what it's referenced on screen right now, is a precision grip effect, where just like on the Index controllers, you can use your middle finger and little fingers to crush a can, for example. With Quest Pro, you can use your thumb and index finger to crush, for example, a ping pong ball or whatever object you have that you could crush in your hand. So I really would love a controller that had all of these things at once, where you had, you know, squeezing on both your index finger and your other fingers. But for now, we're kind of getting one and the other. And the other thing, of course, as you would have seen on screen a while ago, is index finger sensing. So it can sense both where your index finger is left to right along the trigger and the distance it is away from the trigger. And that's obviously going to enable some very specific interactions as well as just better gestures in social VR. Fascinating to see all the tech going into these controllers. And obviously, as you probably know already, these are self-tracking controllers. They have a Snapdragon chip in them that is actually more powerful than Oculus Go. Each of these controllers is more powerful than Oculus Go, and that chip is used to do positional tracking from the three cameras on the controllers.
Wait, Heaney, are you telling me I could strap this to a Go and get sixed off? Oh, why? I don't know why I thought of that, and it's the stupidest idea ever, but okay, it's actually possible, I guess. I'm seeing some really interesting comments here. Christian saying, what do we think of MKBHD's viral video showing off multiple display monitors on the Quest Pro? Go read. You could search uploadvr.com, workrooms, Quest Pro. That video was exactly my experience with Quest Pro. It is the Quest Pro feels made for workrooms. And key thing to kind of keep in mind is that workrooms demo that is shown in that video and it's in workrooms is a solo personal experience right now. So I just met with Harry, our Australian writer, yesterday in VR using workrooms, and that was a single monitor experience between us. I could not pull up three monitors because of all the different things going on, at least on Quest 2 right now. But in a personal solo experience with these three giant monitors, it crossed a line in legibility and size that really did feel to me like it was better than my setup at home. I mean, like, I have yet to spend the hundreds of dollars necessary to have the best monitor at home, right? I'm using, you know, it was like last year or something, I got a 4K monitor, and it's not top of the line. It's the cheapest 4K monitor I could afford. And then I've got a 1080p monitor right next to it. And one is sized really small because I went and picked the smallest one I could get, and one is sized really big. These were three gigantic monitors, all perfectly spaced right around me, and the text on it was all really crisp. And as soon as I took this headset off and was looking back at this little monitor on this laptop, I was extremely let down. But I think there's a lot of underselling of that feature. You know, a lot of people aren't expecting much from it. If we have Guy Godin in our comments, he's been debating Andrew Bosworth over the CTO over at Meta about what people are going to get out of it. I think people are going to be surprised personally as to how useful that feature is going to be. And I have every expectation Heaney is going to try to do his review of Quest Pro, or try to write it out from Quest Pro using that multiple monitor setup. And any other comments you want to get to? I saw some interesting ones.
But I was going to point out, I actually did my review of Virtual Desktop on Oculus Go inside Virtual Desktop. So it's, you know, I find it really strange to see Guy Godin being so against what his own app was originally designed for. Maybe, you know, his personal expectations or the resolution, for example, needs to be are just higher than mine. But even on Oculus Go, I find it perfectly possible to, with a very large monitor, to do a review of an app. And you know, now we're at a significantly higher resolution with something like Quest Pro. Someone here is asking whether Quest Pro controllers can simulate resistance of a gun trigger like the PlayStation VR 2 Sense. No, they cannot. This is not a resistive trigger, but it does have a haptic motor on it, as we mentioned. So you can do different, but not the same. You can give a precise haptic effect as you shoot a gun trigger, but you can't actually resistance. Are we ready to move on to the last aspect of Quest Pro, the foveated rendering?
Yeah, I think so. I want to mention, since we're bringing up Virtual Desktop and we're talking about these controllers right now, I will be curious if Half-Life Alyx, the can crushing aspect of Half-Life Alyx, if something like Virtual Desktop will be able to pass through some of those sensations from these controllers to Half-Life Alyx without a lot of setup on the side of the user. That's been a long time coming, right? The Index controllers have these grips that allow you to kind of do things like crush cans more realistically. It would be nice to have that pass through, even from like a Quest 2 with these controllers, on through to a PC VR system and have that experience now with another set of controllers. Oh, hello, Guy. You are in our comments, the creator of Virtual Desktop. Yes, let's talk about the foveated rendering performance. There is a lot of misunderstanding out there about what's possible with foveated rendering. Heaney is on top of it and will break it down to us for us in very, very straightforward settings.
So I think there are misunderstandings on both sides. On one side, you have the people who have looked at the research that Facebook Oculus put out years ago that said that, you know, the ideal hypothetical foveated rendering system far in the future could get you something like 20 times GPU benefits. And they're obviously wrong because this is a first generation product with limited eye tracking and a limited refresh rate. But then there's also people who have kind of taken John Carmack's comments slightly out of context, where Carmack said there isn't much benefit to eye-tracked foveated rendering over fixed foveated rendering. And somehow that has been translated by some people into there is no benefit of eye-tracked foveated rendering at all. The truth is somewhere very much so between those two positions. Quest Oculus headsets since Oculus Go have supported a feature called fixed foveated rendering, where the edges of the lens are rendered in a lower resolution than the center to save performance. And that works very well because most of the time in VR, you're looking forward anyway. And with Fresnel lenses, like were used in all of the headsets up until, you know, Pico 4 and Quest Pro, the edges of the lens are blurrier anyway. So the benefits of fixed foveated rendering, you can't really see the reduced detail as much depending on the level. So eye-tracked foveated rendering instead renders where you're actually directly looking at each frame in full resolution and the rest in lower resolution. And the benefits of it are actually marginal over fixed foveated rendering because this is first generation eye tracking with a something like 50 millisecond end-to-end latency. This is a headset with a 90 hertz refresh rate, so it only has a given time of around 11 milliseconds to actually get to display something, and your eye can move in that time. And as you can see in this video, the foveal area is still rather large. So I'll see if I can bring up here a quick graph to show you what the actual direct benefits are over fixed foveated rendering. Firstly, here you can see the three levels that are available to developers. Fixed foveated rendering is on top, where you can see in blue the area that's rendered in full resolution, and the rest is in lower resolution. So now I'll bring up the chart that shows the exact benefits.
So one of our commenters was asking whether we were looking at Toby eye tracking in that video that Heaney just played, and no, we were not. That is a video directly from Meta's presentation for developers. Meta has its own eye tracking technology. Toby eye tracking is the eye tracking supplier inside of PSVR 2. They're also pretty much industry standard eye tracking provider in all the other headsets we're seeing on the market today. So Meta has built its own technology and it's different. And the key thing, I think, as Heaney gets into this pretty soon, is Meta has done an extraordinary amount post-launch on the Quest 2 to add more features to the Quest. So keep in mind that Meta has hired the world's best in machine learning, and they are pushing them as hard as they possibly can to turn out benefits for various things. So there's a fair chance that these things that we're seeing on launch could be different 6 months or a year. Now, you don't want to make your purchasing decisions on that because anything can happen. Heaney and I have talked about the possibility of this first generation Quest Pro could be outdated as quickly as the first generation Quest was outdated, but it's still something to keep in mind that Meta has world-class machine learning teams and they are trying to push the most that they can out of these devices. So sorry to interrupt you, Heaney. Go ahead.
So ADR2T in the comments are saying that dynamic foveated rendering with eye tracking would help more if they increased the field of view. And that's true. It definitely would if you used to have a much higher resolution headset with much higher field of view. Just to point out, though, the Quest Pro field of view actually is 10% wider than Quest 2, and it was noticeable. It is not the same field of view as Quest 2. But yeah, you look at the graph here and you can see if you use the most aggressive foveation level, which is level 3, and you're using a higher resolution than normal as your base resolution, you can get up to a 52% improvement in GPU from eye-tracked foveated rendering. But there are major caveats that I've just pointed out in both of those. These three levels that you get for eye-tracked foveated rendering and for fixed foveated rendering, when you increase them, it's more noticeable. On a Quest 2, if you use level 3 fixed foveated rendering, you can notice that it's lower resolution around the edges. The one thing that we don't know yet, and what I will be very carefully checking in our Quest Pro review, is how noticeable are each level of eye-tracked foveated rendering? Because these numbers don't matter until we know that, because we need to figure out which level is where the limit of noticeability happens. And then from that, we can say the advantages. Because if you can notice fixed foveated rendering at level 2 a little bit and notice it a lot at level 3, then that needs to be compared to what you start to notice for eye-tracked foveated rendering. And then we'll be able to give you the real results. But the key thing to note is that this is first generation eye tracking, and you're not going to get magical 20 times benefits or anything like that.
We're ready to move on to the Valve job listing. Please let us know. We will come back to your comments if you have any questions. We will get to it probably later in the show, but we are keeping an eye on everything in those comments. We ready to talk about the job listing now, Heaney?
Yeah, let's talk about Valve.
Yeah, so this was a very interesting job listing, first noted by Bradley in our comments, and a pretty significant sentence in this job listing that, you know, Heaney and I always go back and forth on our headlines that we use for our articles, and I saw the headline that Heaney came up for our report on this, and it's heavy when you read this sentence. I have the quote here from the thing, and if you don't have it, but I think it's pretty significant.
Oh yeah, I have the Valve listing. So yeah, this was a job listing that came up that essentially confirms the roughly year of speculation that Valve is working on a new headset. Although you could say that Gib Newell's comments in public and in interviews have already essentially confirmed that, because he has talked about wanting to release a wireless VR headset with integrated compute. He has said, Valve employees have said that the Steam Deck's chip would work very well in that environment. Gib Newell, in fact, when asked about this in reference to the Steam Deck, said, "We're not really there yet, but this is a stepping stone." So to me, that indicates that this is definitely something Valve working on. But of course, now we have direct confirmation. This job listing said, "At Valve, we are pushing the boundaries of virtual reality experiences. We are looking for versatile, self-directed software engineers in computer vision who can help us achieve the next steps in VR with millions of customers worldwide. The main scope of this position is to prototype, ship, and support consumer gaming products leveraging visual inertial tracking, HMD and controllers, camera pass-through, environment understanding, eye tracking, and hand tracking." If you're not familiar with the acronym HMD, it's head-mounted display. And visual inertial tracking is the inside-out tracking that's used in all of the standalone headsets.
We've got a question from Benjamin here, going back to some of the controllers. Do you think Quest 3 would ship with the new controllers, or do you think it would make it too expensive? I think it would make it too expensive. Mark Zuckerberg is on the record as saying the Quest 3 will be in the $300 to $500 range, the same as the Quest 2, and you're talking about $300 controllers on their own. You're asking the right question, though. Over the long term of Meta's evolution, does Meta get to a place where they ship a headset without controllers? And does it make sense for them to have two options, you know, the low-cost ringed controllers that they've got now, plus the Pro controllers for a next gen experience where you've got better haptics and all that? Or do they just, you know, try to simplify their product lines and just have one device over the long term? The issue that Heaney and I go back on again and again, week after week on this show, is how does Meta make that transition? Because they want to achieve, Carmack in his keynote pointed out, I want a super light headset that is $250. And that is kind of the target over the long term. But at the same time, Carmack said they're not building that headset right now. But they, you know, Meta knows that they achieve a larger market size by lowering the price of the headset. And obviously, when you can get on a plane and not have any extra hardware, you literally just pull a headset out of your bag that is very thin, light, put it on, and have a good collection of apps that you can interact with just in midair, things like Cubism, where you're pinching pieces right in front of you. Those could be really at home in that kind of experience, but you're also not going to get the amazing immersive haptic experiences out of open air interaction. So it's, you know, much of the Quest brand right now is centered around controllers and the games you can have with controllers. And I don't know how Meta shifts. They're working at it. They've released tech sample framework software for developers to explore adapting their controller-based games to open-air hand tracking. And I will say that one of the most impressive demos that I had with Quest Pro was Figmin XR, where I made this motion in midair to make this my paintbrush. I was using Tilt Brush, one of the classic apps of VR's first generation, open sourced by Google, and I was making these movements through midair and painting, as far as I was concerned, one-to-one with what it felt like to have a controller in my hand and painting with the tip of a controller. It was incredible. So I think we're getting much closer to that bridge being crossed on Quest Pro with hand tracking, but it's still a very, very difficult thing. You're not going to want to play a lot of games with hand tracking only.
Let's just go through some of the comments here. I see some questions. MeowMix points out they're called Touch Pro, which means it'll be a non-pro version of Touch. So Touch is actually what Meta refers to as their regular controllers as. The original Rift, when those controllers weren't shipped with it, they were marketed as Touch controllers. They kept that marketing for Rift S and Quest, but it's kind of gone away in the Quest 2 era, but they're still fundamentally, those Quest 2 controllers are the Quest Touch controllers, and thus the Quest Pro controllers are Quest Touch Pro. Someone else is asking, Paradise Decay is asking, with Meta buying all these games companies, do you foresee Quest 3 with some major VR releases? Yes, and Ian actually wrote an editorial about this. If you check our website and just search Quest 3, he asks, what can these 8 studios that Meta has acquired do with Quest 3? Because they haven't actually formally announced any game since they were acquired. Over the past 3 years, Meta has acquired 8 game studios and hasn't announced any of their titles. So we would expect that on Quest 3, they will be able to achieve significantly more than what they've done on Quest 2. And this actually ties in to a comment from Hard to Get right after, who says, Quest 3 seems it is only going to be a slight Quest 2 improvement. And I strongly disagree with that, mm-hmm. because one of the things that we saw in the leaks is that based on import logs of Qualcomm chips going to headset makers, and based on a source of Sadly It's Bradley, who's in our comments, that says that Quest 2 will use that new chip, Quest 3 just may have a GPU that is twice as powerful as the one in Quest 2. So if you add these two aspects together, 8 game studios plus twice the GPU power, I think we're going to see a lot more on Quest 3 than a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, and add to that, so just it's one of the things I included in that editorial. You know, the Meta Connect event that was held last week only included a few very small game announcements, right? They announced that they bought Camouflage and Armature, the developers that brought Resident Evil 4 to VR, as well as Iron Man VR. They got Iron Man VR coming to Quest. But like a little note in that, if you go to, you know, you might not have noticed this in our reporting because of the way we broke it up. And that's why we're so thankful that you tune in to our show where we can contextualize a lot of this stuff. But we've got some Iron Man VR gameplay on our channel. And then we've got some quotes in our hands-on report with Iron Man VR. But camouflage didn't actually work. You know, camouflage only put some of its team on bringing Iron Man VR to Quest 2. They contracted and partnered with another studio to do that porting work to get that game onto Quest 2 this season. So what is camouflage working on, right? This is the maker of a highly desired game on PSVR that got a lot of people really excited to embody a superhero on the PSVR headset. And now they're working for Meta, and they're working on something that hasn't been announced, right? And they're joining the other studios on things that haven't been announced. And then you add to that all the money that Meta is throwing at game developers out there to bring exclusive content to Quest. You know, add that to the processor overhead that might be there in a generational jump from a Qualcomm XR2 Gen 1 to a Qualcomm XR2 Gen 2. You've got a recipe for just a massive leap forward in gaming. And all the gaming buyers out there that, you know, have bought into Meta's ecosystem so far feel let down right now because the Quest Pro wasn't made for them. The Quest Pro is made for this different use case of working from home, and it just happens to be compatible with all the existing Quest games. I saw Ola's comment, and I wanted to respond to it. Am I using Quest 2 hand tracking right now? I found your hand tracking is impressively accurate. That is Heaney using, what is it, hand tracking 2.0 right now, and there is 2.1 coming down the line. I'm very excited for that. Are you going to be able to implement that, Heaney?
Oh yeah, for sure. We'll have hand tracking 2.1 when it ships late this year. If you check uploadvr.com, you can get more details on that. The one thing I want to point out, as I always do, Ian, is that Quest Pro is not just for remote work and collaboration. It's also for mixed reality. It's this product that is kind of pushing those two things at once. It's, you won't get the kind of mixed reality that you get on Quest Pro on Quest 2. And we'll talk later about why you won't, at least barring a major software update, get that on Pico 4 either. Kevin Brook asks, can you use the internet on Quest Pro without controllers? Yes, you can. You can use hand tracking and a keyboard and just kind of type away on your keyboard and pinch to select on the browser. That's something you can already do on Quest 2, actually. Are we ready to talk about HTC's teasing?
Yeah, let's. HTC is teasing something. Heaney, they've been leaving secret messages in their tweets that almost seem, you know, almost redefine subtweeting. It brings new meaning to the term subtweeting because I feel like those messages were left partially for David Heaney, who's going to go brighten up those images, just like a couple other watchers of the industry, and see if there's any hidden features in these headsets coming. Heaney, why don't you contextualize what HTC might be teasing here?
Yeah, so this is, teasing really is the word here. There hasn't been any kind of concrete announcement here. Instead, they are just showing, I'm trying to bring it up, I don't know where the image is gone, but they're just kind of showing a very dark image of what appears to be the corner of a headset. And their teasing is that this headset is small. All their marketing and teasing so far is small is better, for example. And they confirm to us that this is a headset that they are teasing. But the interesting hint that makes us think that this might be a Pico 4 or Quest 2 competitor is that they shared a article which was reviewing Vive Focus 3 in an arcade with the caption "food for thought" and the little thinking emoji. So the article was titled, "The HTC Vive Focus 3 is an amazing VR headset it doesn't actually want you to buy," referring to the fact that Vive Focus is currently only sold to businesses. To me, that strongly hints that HTC is planning some sort of consumer headset. The question is, what is it? It could be a new Vive Flow, Vive Flow being their ultralight VR glasses. They are the lightest VR headset you can buy in the West. They It doesn't actually have a full XR2 chip. It has an XR1 chip, so it can't play the majority of content. It doesn't have track controllers. PHCC kind of pitched it for media watching and meditation and things like that, and it obviously hasn't taken off. But maybe a generation 2 could add track controllers or controller-free hand tracking and try and bring that concept back. It also could be a PC VR headset. HTC hasn't actually released a successor to their Vive Cosmos series from 2019. So this might just be a PC headset with pancake lenses that tries to take the place of the Reverb G2 in the market. But the thing that everyone is hoping, or at least, you know, HTC fans are hoping for, is that this is a consumer standalone headset, a Vive Focus for consumers that takes on Quest 2 and Pico 4. And even if you're not a HTC fan, you should want this because competition in the market is generally a good thing and pushes each player to up their game. And maybe HTC has a unique spin to a standalone headset that neither ByteDance nor Meta has yet.
Paradise Decay making the joke that HTC is teasing a carry case for all your other headsets. That is brutal and mean. I also made the joke on Twitter that I felt very guilty about I felt guilty about that. HTC is teasing headsets with, you know, to their 250,000 followers, all one from a headset they shipped back in 2016 in partnership with Valve, which, you know, I think it's fair. I think it's true. But it's obviously cheaper to do this teasing method on Twitter and, you know, than it is to actually go and pay for advertising. I'm seeing Shola asking this question of, are we going to discuss the report that Meta internally is struggling with devs using Horizon Worlds, thoughts, implementation, and thoughts on user retention? He's been closely watching this, and there are very big features coming to Horizon Worlds that are going to change the game pretty significantly. Yeah.
Yeah, and we did report on that article. We did actually report on that report. You can see on the website, we discussed it. Obviously, that was someone else's report, though, so we're essentially just pointing to their details. But you can go and read The Verge's original report, and like I said, we have pointed to it.
Yeah, the Sketchfab, one of the things you can do is you're supposedly going to be able to import Sketchfab 3D models that are licensed for Creative Commons. When I see that piece, that feature coming to Horizon Worlds, I see kind of testing the waters for metaverse interoperability, this long-term concept. So Sketchfab is obviously owned by Epic Games. They're a very big proponent of open platforms, obviously fighting tooth and nail with Apple and with Google over the 30% cut that those platforms take. And then there's this idea of this long-term metaverse where Tim Sweeney, the head of Epic Games over there, has been using the term metaverse for a long time. And being able to import 3D models into Horizon Worlds could be a path where they kind of got to show how this is going to work out. You remember Google Poly had a lot of, you know, there were developers using Google's Poly system in various ways as a service, but it was bare bones. And obviously Google moved on just like it does from so many other services. I'll be curious to see what future that service has.
Yeah, this is a photo of what Ian was talking about. It's an example Meta has provided of a world made with the new tools coming to Horizon Worlds that will let creators import 3D models and use TypeScript, which is a superset of JavaScript. So it'll be really interesting to see how that, in combination with the new Meta avatars next year, evolves Horizon Worlds as a platform. I think a lot of people look too much at where it is rather than where it's going. With something like this, especially in an industry as early as VR, you want to look at the trajectory, not the current position. You know, aim where the ball is going, not where the ball currently is. A few questions in the comments here. FX Node asks, is the Quest Pro pass-through stereoscopic? Yes, it's depth correct. You get a different view for each eye, and it's truly 3D. The quality of the Quest Pro pass-through in terms of the actual image quality is not great, but it is fully 3D, and that's something that the only other standalone headset I've seen do that in color is Lynx R1. And that means the Quest Pro is kind of fully suitable for mixed reality experiences. You're asking from a technical level how it works. They reconstruct a view of your environment using the stereoscopic black and white tracking cameras, just like Quest 2 generates its 3D view, and then they colorize it with the central color camera. So you do get some weird color artifacts there sometimes, where an object kind of loses color for a second at certain angles, but like I said, it's 3D.
Christopher Bope, thank you so much for the donation, $10 donation there, writing that it's there, our number one fan. Thank you so much. It means a lot. And please do like this link, share it out to your friends, and become subscribers or members of our team or, you know, our group. We love our commenters. You're so supportive of each other, and we want to make sure everyone gets the information they need to make the best of their time and money in VR. And yeah, we try to warn people as honestly as we can, as directly as we can, about the ways to best spend their money, and everyone in our comments can be part of that journey. So thank you so much for that. Any other commenters that we should respond to before we move on to our last subject of the day?
No comments that aren't about Pico 4, which is what we're going to talk about in a second. Wait, actually, the last thing was Kevin Brook asks, can you use AirLink or USB-C to have better pass-through or mixed reality? You can access mixed reality on Quest and Quest Pro on a PC, but only in the Unity editor. It's only designed so that you can develop games quickly without having to continuously push a new build to your headset. The headset that really properly utilizes the power of a PC to give you a depth correct pass through is the Vario XR3, but that's a, you know, north of $5,000 headset. The Valve Index also has its own depth correct pass through, which is kind of cool. I like it, but there's a lot of distortion in the near field there, so it's only really good for kind of far away details. But Valve, you know, they shipped with non-depth correct pass-through, so it was great to see them do a software update there.
Yeah, I'm curious about the PC connection with Quest Pro, right? There's a lot of people that have been bummed that the face tracking features probably aren't going to be pass-throughable, or at least not directly. You know, there's people, I think, in VR chat who would love to animate their facial expressions in VR chat using PC. You think virtual desktop is going to be there with that feature?
That's exactly what I was going to ask. Technically, I hope Guy Godin's still in our comments to answer this, but technically, virtual desktop as an app on Quest Pro can access the face and eye tracking and then send that across its network connection and then pass that through the Steam VR so that you can use it in VR chat. Guy Godin, if you're still in the comments, I'd love to know if you have plans to do that.
Yeah, a very, very key feature. Yeah, yes, a lot of work, but it's doable. All right. Thank you, Guy, for that comment. It's doable. We're, you know, that is a perfect example of why so many people have turned to Guy Godin's virtual desktop over the years. And we're going to talk about some of the PC VR as we move into Pico 4 here. Virtual desktop is on Pico 4, and he's got a comparison in his head of what virtual desktop is doing compared to Pico's own solution. But why don't you talk a little bit about Pico 4 and any of those comments you want to respond to?
Yeah, first I was going to respond to what Guy said. I was going to say, Guy, honestly, I've seen so much demand for that feature from a lot of the VR enthusiasts that if it is something that's a lot of work, you should continue. My suggestion here, this may sound crazy, is even if you made it a DLC for virtual desktop, I'm sure a lot of those people would buy it. If they, you know, if you explain this is a lot of work and you charge like an extra kind of in-app payment to access this, there are a lot of people who would really love that feature, and it does not sound like Meta is going to do it. So that's just food for thought there. But yeah, let's talk about our final topic of today, Pico 4. As we mentioned at the start, we have a full review on uploadvr.com, but if there's any questions you have, or especially anything that I didn't cover in that review, this is now the section of the show to ask them.
Yeah, I just spent most of my morning talking with Heaney about his ins and outs here. And just to recap for people who aren't aware, right, Quest has been in a market by itself for years now. They announced the Quest, I think it was near the end of 2018, shipped the first Quest in 2019, and then quickly followed it up with Quest 2 the following year, I think it was. And now the Quest 2 has been just in a market by itself for this whole length of time. We've been trying to get the true story out of Google and what happened there. And I've heard some interesting things since I last talked about this situation where, you know, this timeline, you know, Google kills everything left and right, but it had everything it needed for bringing standalone VR to market and then just got scared and walked away. And it's been a Quest show since then. That changed essentially today. And I have to say he needs analysis of this hardware. This Pico 4 hardware is unmatched. I don't see anyone else looking at hardware the way he does. His analysis of this is going to be something you're going to want to read. And going forward, we're going to want to keep reading what he has to say on this going forward, because, you know, he's got a way of formulating his analysis of this that you're not going to find elsewhere. So I'll turn this over to Heaney, and yeah, give us, I'm seeing Guy's comment, dang, okay, lots of people ordered it. So yeah, Guy, I think a lot of people want your stuff. So go ahead, Heaney.
So I'll just kind of very, very briefly cover what I said in the article going by the headings that I have in it. So comfort-wise, it is noticeably lighter and thinner than Quest 2, to the point that Quest 2 looks completely antiquated and boxy beside it. I tried to find a good analogy for this, but there really isn't one. It's kind of like going from CRT monitors to the first flat panels, but not really. It's kind of like going from a kind of thick, bulky plastic laptop to a thin ultrabook. But again, those aren't great analogies. The other thing is that this is comfortable out of the box. The thing I dislike most about Quest 2 is that to make it comfortable, you have to buy two aftermarket accessories, a better cover, VR cover, and a better strap, such as the Elite strap or one of the many fantastic third-party alternatives. This is comfortable out of the box, and it is really refreshing. There is, however, a serious flaw with the comfort of Pico 4 for some people. The official spec sheet lists the IPD range of this as 62 millimeters and above, but you're actually able to go below that all the way down to 58. The problem is that to do that, you have to accept a warning that will tell you that it's going to press against your nose, the lenses will. And this warning is not a, you know, it's not a cover your ass. If you go below 62, the lenses will actually crush your nose. And it's so uncomfortable that I would call it a design flaw and say that if your IPD is below 62, I do not recommend buying this. That aside, the big lenses have a real advantage in that they deliver my favorite feature of Pico 4, which is the field of view. It is both wider and taller than Quest 2, which is really impressive because, ironically, Meta's CTO has spoken before about how a taller field of view can actually be more impactful than a wider field of view. And using Pico 4, he's absolutely correct. It is so immersive that I think that even based on my time with Quest Pro, this will be my PC VR daily driver just because I really enjoy the field of view. Visuals-wise, the sharper lenses that you get on the pancake lenses and the slightly higher resolution are noticeable. It's a step up. It's not a revolutionary difference, but it is a little step up. The problem with the visuals is that the display is actually duller than Quest 2's and the colors are more washed out, which is a big contrast to when I tried Quest Pro because it had the opposite, better contrast and better colors. The problem with the higher resolution and wider field of view, meaning you're rendering more, is that there are performance issues. This is the same XR2 Gen 1 chip in Quest 2 being asked to render a higher resolution and a wider field of view. So you get exactly what you expect. Frame drops in games that you didn't get frame drops on Quest 2. I hope that this is just something that can be fixed by Pico reducing the default resolution or developers tweaking their titles for Pico. But for now, it's annoying. The other technical issue, sort of detailed tech issue, is the tracking is not as rock solid as Quest 2. This is something I suspect that most people won't actually notice. If you're someone who is a kind of tech enthusiast and you really care about these minor details, you'll notice that there is a little bit of jittering on the Pico and its controllers. And I really do mean a little bit. This is incredibly minute that just isn't there on Quest 2. But like I said, I don't think most people will notice that. To quickly go over the rest of the article, the UI is very, very similar to Quest 2's, just a little bit less polished. When I say very, very similar, it's clearly inspired by Quest 2's. The color pass-through, we'll talk more about in a second, but it is not depth correct. Not Quest Pro's pass-through, as I talked about before, is depth correct. You walk around the room, it feels like you're actually in a 3D space and your eyes are seeing the correct image for what you should be seeing. On Pico 4, it's great to check the room quickly. It's great to pick up a drink. It's great for those kind of use cases, but you would not want to use it for sustained periods of time for mixed reality. Personally, I got a headache and eye strain and felt a bit queasy when I tried to use it for a sustained amount of time. We'll talk about the details more, but the last thing I would point out is that the content library on this is more impressive than some people think. You sometimes see comments on Pico articles, oh, Pico has no games. It has actually a lot of the Quest 2's non-exclusive titles, but the big issue is obviously you're never going to get Beat Saber, you're never going to get Resident Evil 4, you're never going to get Population 1, you're never going to get Medal of Honor or the other Meta exclusives. And as we talked about before, Meta has acquired 8 game studios and is likely working on even more exclusives there. So when it comes down to it, like I concluded in my article, the decision here is really, really a tough one. If your IPD is above 62, the decision here becomes, do you want the better hardware or do you want the better software, tech, and content library?
Yeah, so some interesting comments. I know people taking issue with the verbiage that we used of inspired by the Quest 2's interface. It's one of the things I think about long-term, Heaney, about the resistance to ship in the United States, right? Meta is a U.S.-based company with a lot of footprint in the United States. And I do wonder about some of those, those follow-on features where they're duplicating the look of what things look like in a Quest. You know, can they be in the same home market as the competition and still get away with that? There's also, I'm just going to mention, piracy is a thing that is out there, and it is something we as journalists don't typically talk about. There are very careful lines that we try to approach very carefully, things like custom maps in Beat Saber, where you're unlocking a piece of software that you bought so that you can play more songs in it, but it's not our place to kind of talk about how you get those songs, and it's a very thin line. We want to make sure we support the developers who put their hard work into all of this software. But I just have to bring up the piracy aspect because China is a very different market than the United States. The rules around copying or duplicating other people's work are very, very different over there compared to the intellectual property laws in the West. And it's something, you know, when you say it's not going to have all of these exclusives, I would be surprised if there aren't very popular pirating situations that pop up over in China markets for those exclusives over the long term.
You're saying that you think China is going to copy the Meta exclusives and release them on the Chinese Pico store?
I think people will sideload them in large numbers.
Sure, but you wouldn't be able to access the multiplayer in those titles. Maybe you would get them. You'd also need to do quite a bit of work there. The OpenXR, in ideal circumstances, would say that you can put an APK from one headset onto another. I have already tried putting a Quest 2 APK onto Pico 4, and it does not work. In reality, there is a lot more than just the base OpenXR layer at current. So yes, it's possible we'll see those kinds of techniques, but you wouldn't be able to get access to multiplayer. And just as you know, people in our comments are talking about missing Population 1, and it would take a little bit more work than just sideloading. Let's just go through a lot of questions, comments here, because we have a lot of questions about Pico 4. Tom asks, do they have enough of a track record to think that they'll keep supporting the Pico 4 with software updates? Yes, Pico has actually been around for a lot longer than you might expect. They actually released a standalone headset before Oculus Go. They were the first people to release a standalone headset, even in the West. Meowmix asks, how do Pico 4's pancake lenses compare to the Quest 4 pancake lenses? They feel very similar in terms of the sharpness, but Pico 4's have a taller field of view. Pragmatist asked, did you notice the wrong Pico 4 world warping / scaling? So if you move your head, it feels unnatural in native and PC VR. I haven't noticed that in native. I think I did notice that in PC VR, but I haven't had a huge amount of time to test that. So that's something that we will look into in more detail. Kevin asks, overall, do you prefer the visuals and experience on the Quest Pro or Pico 4? I actually prefer the Quest Pro, but let's put a caveat here when we're talking about Pico 4 vs Quest Pro. I think this is a very unfair comparison because the Quest Pro is four times the price. If you are if you're someone who just reads resolution and that's the only thing you care about in a display, you will conclude that Pico 4 has the better display. But in reality, resolution is only one spec of a display. And like I said, the Pico 4's display is actually duller and more washed out than even Quest 2. And Quest Pro's display has much better contrast and colors than Quest 2. So to me, if you're actually looking at the headset, you're going to get a much better visual experience because of the contrast and colors in Quest Pro, even though it has a lower resolution.
Is Pico going to sell in the USA? I think he was just going to read that same comment. We found an FCC filing earlier this year indicating that it might happen. I think the FCC filing was listed as taking, there was some date in there for January. It's a possibility, right? But there's just as much a possibility that Pico moves on with new hardware pretty quickly, isn't there, Heaney?
So it's important to note that Pico does sell in the US, just not to consumers. And that's going to be more important soon because Pico is expected to announce the Pico 4 Enterprise, which a lot of people have been hoping that Pico 4 Pro is coming to consumers in Europe, but it looks like Pico is going to go through their old Enterprise channels for that. The indication that they are going to sell in the USA eventually, though, is that Protocol a few months ago found a job listing that mentions exactly that. It mentions handling consumer sales of hardware in the United States. It does sound like Pico is biding its time and waiting until it's really, really ready in terms of the software ecosystem, in terms of the hardware, in terms of all of the polish, in terms of the exclusives to take on Meta in its home court. So I would expect it'll happen eventually, but it doesn't sound like it's going to happen this year. Rendered Reality asks, compare the color pass-through of Pico 4 and Quest Pro. I was pretty disappointed with the color pass-through on Quest Pro. I'm sure they'll improve it though. So like I said, Pico 4's pass-through is not depth correct. That's not to say it's monoscopic. It does have a faked stereo offset, which I'm assuming is just a very fancy form of cropping and warping, but it definitely does not feel like you're actually looking at your real world when you walk around. If you're just, you know, sitting at a desk and you want to quickly go into it to grab your drink, it's not the end of the world. You know, as your hand comes towards you, your drink looks absolutely gigantic, like you're a miniature person, but that's not the end of the world. The expectation I want to be crystal clear about here, though, is that barring a major update, Pico 4 is not a mixed reality headset. Because the pass-through is not depth correct, it is simply not suitable for it, whereas Quest Pro, which is four times the price, is also a mixed reality headset because that pass-through is depth correct. I used the pass-through on Quest Pro for quite a few minutes, maybe, you know, 20 minutes in total, as did Ian, and I didn't have any issues in that time. So the quality-wise, though, I would say Pico 4 maybe ever so slightly has the advantage because the colors are being displayed directly from the camera rather than colorized onto a black and white view.
A couple interesting questions there. Alyssa, that was Heaney on his image. He showed it, I think, here briefly. We don't get many images of Heaney. I can confirm he looks like that in the real world. He's also a very fast walker, as I discovered in Vancouver. If you're walking beside him, I can't keep up. I have to basically jog to keep up with him. He's also just a smidge taller than me, and I hate it. What was the other question here that I wanted to talk about? Let's see. Christian, why does Meta fund Qualcomm and letting everyone else taking their fund of chips. It seems like bad business practice. Apple's strategy is to fund TSMC and have half a year exclusive. We don't know the ins and outs, all the details of the Qualcomm Meta agreement. There could still be stipulations there that are being kept private. Your commentary is dead on what we are trying to reveal in that situation. We put questions to both Meta and Qualcomm when they announced that agreement, trying to surface what that might be. And we still don't know. But as it is right now, Meta needs Qualcomm to keep investing in these chips to keep pushing its products forward. And, you know, Meta isn't ready, as Carmack has kind of suggested. Meta's effort to spin up their own chip fabrication and their own chips to do some of the things inside these headsets probably need a little bit more time in the oven baking in order for them to get up to doing some of the stuff themselves. So I think there's a bit of an asymmetric like power struggle there, where Qualcomm had Meta, you know, necessary for Meta to use them. And so, you know, Qualcomm, you know, Meta came out and has this XR2 Gen 1 Plus in this headset, and, you know, it got it out there before everyone else. So there's still something exclusive there.
Yeah, I suspect the answer is because Meta is more concerned about competition in future from Apple than it is from other Android makers like Pico. So Meta doesn't really care if Pico also gets access to these chips, because Pico isn't, for now at least, Meta's primary competition. That may change in future if Pico proves to be, you know, full-fledged competition that takes huge sections of Quest's market share. But for now, Meta's prioritizing their enemies. They're focusing on the future competition with Apple, and Apple obviously has a huge advantage that they make their own chips. So Qualcomm has been known to only really prioritize these, from their perspective, niche segments when a hardware maker comes in and funds it. For example, their smartwatch chip sat stagnant for years, just as, you know, arguably the XR2 chip has sat stagnant for years. But as Ian pointed out, although neither company will say this, it does look like Meta is at least getting first access, because Qualcomm has said that other companies are going to announce XR2 Gen 1 Plus chips, but yet Quest Pro is the first one to ship with it. They also noted that because they are working together, Meta engineers are actually working with Qualcomm on these chips. Meta is able to spec their exact requirements of what they need in their next headset, and the other headset makers have to come along and just make do with whatever Meta has decided. So yes, those chips aren't exclusive to Meta, but they are designed for Meta, and looks like, although we have no idea if this is true, Meta gets them first by a little bit.
So a lot of recurring questions that we've dealt with in the past and we're going to keep coming back to here. MeowMix asking questions about the reprojection method used in Pico and how it compares to asynchronous time warp. And there's asking about the tracking volume of Quest 2 and Pack Ink lenses, Pico 4 and Quest Pro. People are asking for Pico 4 and Quest Pro comparisons, and Heaney and I went back and forth a little bit on it, talking about it. We need to get more time with Quest Pro to really make those assessments clear. It's not appropriate kind of to do too much right now. I'll say personally, I don't have any Pico 4 experience right now, but I was really impressed with the comfort of Quest Pro. I do see myself putting down the Quest 2 and not wanting to pick it up again. Now, that doesn't help anyone who's trying to make a decision one or the other, but obviously 4x price difference is, you know, you're talking about different markets for different products for most people out there. It makes that comparison not fair. And Christian adding that they meant, yeah, it was a 1 to 2 year exclusive, not a half year exclusive.
I'm not sure that's true. Apple. I don't think Apple gets TSMC's nodes for 1 to 2 years. Qualcomm's using that same 4 nanometer node now. Well, so I don't think Apple gets anywhere near that level of exclusivity.
But I wonder if the volume of Apple's devices kind of effectively make it that hard for other people to get in line for those products, because just that's many, you know, Apple places an order for hundreds of millions, theoretically, of those chips before somebody else lines up to get them.
Yeah, but Qualcomm's still on that level. Apple's advantage is that they're designing their own chips. It's not, you know, that they just have access to fabs exclusively compared to someone like Qualcomm or Samsung. It's just that they are designing those chips, and Qualcomm is relying on modified ARM designs. Just to kind of go back on that question you were bringing up before, in our Pico 4 review, we focused on comparing it to Quest 2 because we're talking about headsets that are, you know, €429 and €449. We have only had hands-on impressions of Quest Pro so far. We plan to have a review for the launch, and that's when we'll be comparing it to other headsets, because the majority of people, the majority of buyers out there, are not going to be deciding between a €429 headset and a €430 headset and a €1,800 headset. Those are just very, very different markets, but we will obviously be making that comparison in the Quest Pro review.
Rendered Reality asking, so are we finally to a place where we won't hear VR is dead anymore? No, we will hear it till the end of time, and it's sort of like they'll start just renaming it something else in order to say VR. You know, I'm seeing it I'm seeing it with the pundits out there that are annoying as hell, talking about how VR alone is not the thing. Right now it's VR plus mixed reality is the thing, or, you know, that's it was missing all along. And of course, duh, it was missing your physical layer needing to be layered back in. But the thing I wonder is how long until this mixed reality view, this AR in VR view, gets to be really, really close to what we see with the naked eye. It's one of the questions we want to see out of Apple and what they're able to do with their algorithms and their reconstruction to see how much closer they get. I didn't like it's a tricky thing to discuss, but the pass-through view, the mixed reality view on Quest Pro was a huge step forward from Quest 2, but it was still a miserable view of the real world, right? It's a low, you're looking through a cell phone camera that feels about a decade old with your own eyes. It doesn't feel great. So even though I could see myself using it a lot more than the black and white camera on a Quest 2, I'm also probably going to want to turn it off quite a lot in order to have a little bit more battery life and, just stay inside VR as often as possible. I love the VR content out there, so I'm probably going to want to get the full blinders to block out the outside world on that headset quite a lot. Any comments there you want to get back to, Heaney?
I was just going to reply to that same comment about when will we get the end of the VR is dead articles. I think it'll be when Apple enters the market. I think a lot of people in the kind of wider tech blog sphere will not believe that a product category is real until Apple puts their name on it and Apple claims to have invented half of the technologies in it. And, you know, a commenter here, I can't read your name, but it says Apple chips have been light years ahead of Snapdragon chips. You're absolutely correct. And, you know, we're not denying that. That is going to be one of Apple's key advantages in their headset, is that those chips, because Apple's designing them, and they've been building up this chip team for almost a decade now. This was an investment they made with billions of dollars very early on when other companies didn't believe in this idea of making their own chips. And that's going to pay off greatly for Apple in their headset, we all suspect.
Andrew asking, do we have any insight on games that will be adding eye-tracked foveated rendering? Has anyone said? I don't think anyone's announced that they're going to support that feature, right?
No, what we do know, though, is that it was just recently added to the SDK, so we'll likely see developers implement it. But as we discussed near the start of the show, the benefit is not going to be the kind of benefit that you'll eventually get in many years' time with perfect eye tracking on very advanced headsets. And it sounds like the benefit will basically be that instead of seeing the edges of the lens in fixed foveated rendering, you won't see that anymore. So when you actually think of the end result of eye-tracked foveated rendering for Quest Pro, it will be that the edge of the lenses will get clear, strangely enough.
One of the questions was asking if PSVR 2 is going to get PC support. That is one of Heaney and my ongoing debates of whether there is a path for Sony to do that. There is. We do expect hackers, you know, home makers, to try to come up with some kind of driver system for it to do it. It happened on PSVR 1 to get PSVR 1 working on PC systems. We do have an article quite recently on uploadvr.com going through whether Half-Life Alyx could be offered on the PlayStation Store. That is a far likelier thing than Sony to formally support PC systems. The thing, you know, to wrap up a little bit of this, you know, I wonder whether we are now, you know, the next 2 years are going to see the death of single mode headsets, right? I think, well, single mode meaning standalone wins. I think standalone has won. I don't think the Windows MR approach of a tethered PC headset makes sense going forward. And the benefits of having a device that stands on its own with great games and then can be connected to other devices going forward, that's, I think, the path forward for a lot of devices. And that is the thing I think about when I think about the possibility of Sony getting there. But there's just short-term too little benefit to them to not get everyone into their software library.
Yeah, well, I think it's strange to say that just on, you know, how many months it is before PlayStation VR 2 launches. Clearly, there is going to be this massive headset that's going to do some significant things that none of the standalone headsets are doing. That is going to be a single-mode tethered headset, the PlayStation VR 2. But I would agree with you that the PlayStation VR 2 will probably be the last of the first era of VR. It'll be the last mainstream tethered headset. It'll be the last mainstream headset to use Fresnel lenses, most likely, as all of the other headsets are moving across to pancake lenses. And I do expect that we'll see some sort of rotational tracking support for PSVR 2 on PC done by modders and hackers, but it's going to be a lot harder to get the positional tracking in there because PlayStation VR 1 was tracked by blobs of light on the headset that were tracked by a webcam. So, you know, that could be implemented fairly easy by modders and hackers. Fairly is a relative term there. But if you wanted to be able to bring tracking to from PlayStation VR 2 to PC, you would have to write your own inside-out tracking algorithm. You would have to figure out all of the intrinsics of Sony's cameras. You would then also have to simultaneously do the IR LED constellation blob tracking on the controllers. It is a lot more work. So maybe for simulators, a lot earlier than that, we'll see just a rotation support, but I can't see a full-fledged PSVR 2 tracking coming to PC, not to mention the issues with the cable in that it's using a single USB-C cable. You would have to either compress the image over USB-C like Oculus Link works, or you would have to come up with some sort of splitter adapter that can put it into your GPU's display port. It is a lot more technically complex than porting PSVR 1.
Yeah, I think a lot about the fact that PSVR 2 is not compatible backwards with PSVR 1 games, yet the controller scheme is sort of future-proofed now, right? They've actually gone through the effort of those controllers on PSVR 2 being the standard now for these controller systems. So there's a lot going forward, and I'm seeing in our comments the suggestion that Sony could get there with standalone. Yeah, I do think they could get there with standalone and then have it be compatible with PS5. And then that is the period where you start wondering whether you could get a bunch of PC games on a standalone or PSVR games on a standalone using a wireless link. But it is a whole generation away hardware-wise for Sony to get there, and they have to kind of execute really well with PSVR 2 in order to make it make sense for them to get that far down the line.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very long way off if it is going to happen at all.
And where will Pico and Apple and Meta be by the time that device is ready to ship? And even Valve, yeah. Right? If that's that, you know, Valve is very much, people are begging Valve to get there with a standalone system that also does PC. And I think there's a lot of excitement there for if Valve is able to deliver. We've seen Valve in the past deliver in a very short span of time a very compelling product. So I don't think the clock has quite run out on Valve, but you know, we've seen it in our comments, people bringing up links, and we have talked about links for a very long time. This idea of this mixed reality headset with really nice pass-through capabilities, but they had a limited amount of time to get out there ahead of Meta and what it was building. And that time has now passed, right? Meta is going to be shipping in volume this month. And yeah, they're at different prices, so there's still a lot to be excited for Lynx. But again, it's, you know, are they still have to deliver and they still have to ship at volume. So we have to see whether anyone can get to volume at the same pace as Meta.
The one thing I would note about Lynx, as I said earlier, is that it does have the best color pass-through of any standalone headset I've ever tried. I only got to try it very briefly at CES at the very start of this year, but it has better color pass-through than Quest Pro, despite using the standard XR2 Gen 1 processor. So that makes me kind of optimistic for the future of pass-through in general, but it's important to note that Lynx is designed around that feature. Every part of that product's design is around how do we get the best pass-through. You could argue that Quest Pro is a VR headset first and a mixed reality headset second. You could argue that, though it's debatable, but Lynx is very much so a mixed reality headset first and a virtual reality headset second. But just to come back to PlayStation VR 2, I don't agree that Sony needs to be standalone yet. I think that there's still a place for this very high-end VR that is unashamedly driven by a powerful tethered device, you know, the PlayStation 5 in this perspective. They are using this to drive high dynamic range OLED displays that are likely very power hungry. They are delivering, you know, with those Fresnel lenses, a wider field of view. They are going to be able to deliver AAA games that are simply not possible on any Pico or any Quest. They're going to be able to deliver graphics that really inspire people to get into VR in a way that none of the gameplay of Quest and Pico will ever do. And do I wish that it was at least wireless? Yes, but I don't think it needs to be standalone yet, especially given that the entire point of it is to be leveraging the power of that PlayStation 5. Why would Sony bother going head-to-head with Pico and Quest when they can deliver their own vision of VR that's very different?
Wabo making the comment, VR could die. It's not impossible. It still needs more actual killer apps beyond gimmicks. You know, I've been in that place where that commenter is coming from before. I don't think I'm in that place now. I've played through in my head the scenarios, right? If there are peer-reviewed, real health concerns about using headsets in your vision, that could be something that could do it. But things like working out is a killer use case that is being used in very large numbers in very meaningful ways. People are losing tens of pounds in the privacy of their own homes, working out religiously and sweating out the bottoms of their headsets, despite how ugly, bulky these headsets are, right? They're just the most uncomfortable things they can possibly be, yet people are flocking to it. And over on Quest Pro, we are getting over the multi-monitor thing. I saw the commenter about multitasking being one reason to use PC. PCs are, there's a lot going on with your Windows system having a lot of background processes and connecting to a lot of external hardware. It's a pain. You know, I've talked about it on the show a lot, to use a PC with a system like a Quest. There's a lot that can go wrong, a lot of friction that's added. I agree that multitasking on standalone is going to be the kind of proving point, but you know, you talk about working in VR and having a multi-monitor set up everywhere you go. You're talking about working out in VR and getting fit, and then you're talking about unmatched immersion video games, right? You feel like you're there. Those are tent poles of VR today in 2022. And that's, you know, yes, all the people saying that VR is dead, a lot of them just like to sound cool. They like to, you know, point at the silly little avatars, the ones we're using right now. These are silly little avatars. But when you see the codec avatars, which I've seen, and you see how they look better than Leia did in Rogue One, right? They recreated Leia in Rogue One, and it still looked a little bit in the Uncanny Valley. I saw a live face-tracked avatar that was driven by a research VR headset, and you can see the end goal coming close enough. We're getting there, And yeah, VR is growing each year slightly bigger. So I don't think VR can die.
Yeah, it's not just growing slightly bigger. VR is growing rapidly every year. I think the perspective that you see from some of the wider tech media that VR could die or that VR is dead, it's not just wrong, it's catastrophically wrong. It directly contradicts the evidence that shows that every year VR headsets are selling millions and millions of more units. And if you look at it in the long arc of technology, like Ian is pointing out with some of those future technologies that will arrive eventually, like photorealistic face-tracked avatars, this is the very beginning. Not only is VR not dead, it's only just being born. This is like the early 90s for personal computers. It's like coming along and seeing a Windows 3.1 PC in 1992 and saying, oh, I think these PCs are dead, or, you know, this isn't going to take off. This is the beginning of the beginning still. Even with all of the advancements we're talking about in these technologies, these headsets will look completely primitive in 10 years from now compared to what Ian and I have seen and the research that we have seen about what's to come. Even the content as well. Games of the AAA games that you see that sell Xbox and PlayStations, like, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2, those take like 5 or 6 years to make. We're barely even 5 or 6 years into consumer VR being a thing. Developers are still learning how to best take advantage of VR. They're still building up budgets as each generation of hardware sells more units and gives them more to work with. And we're still in the very, very early days, and VR is not only not dead, it has an incredibly bright future and is just being born.
Yeah, our commenters reiterating the fitness thing, getting people into VR that didn't expect to get into VR, right? We don't even have headsets that are finely tuned for fitness just yet, and people are still using them daily and getting their friends and family into using them in these unexpected ways. And I love the reference to the iPhone. I saw someone mentioning the iPhone and talking about how it was going to be a fad. Even the famous Steve Ballmer video of him laughing at the cost of the iPhone. And, you know, how's Microsoft's phone business today, all these years later, right? I came up in this generation of getting that first generation iPhone, and I will never forget the feeling of feeling like I had superpowers other people didn't have in my pocket, right? I had Google Maps and could do turn-by-turn directions. I could pull up the full internet, and looking around at everyone else in the room, realizing that they're going to be there soon enough, they're going to get this device. It's why we are so focused on VR, right? It's that same feeling. Heaney's in Northern Ireland, I'm in the United States, and I look forward to this meeting with him every week where we get to digest this with you and feel like we're sharing this room. And there is a long path between these avatars looking the way they are right now and them being those Kodak avatars that I saw in Meta's research labs. But the path is laid there, and it just is, it's not dead. It's just going to question of whether it's 5 years or 20 years, really, in my head now. Anything you want to say before we wrap up here? We've had a very long show with amazing comments. Thank you all.
Yeah, it's such a long show. I've had to actually plug my headset in here, although it wasn't 100% charged at the start. A lot of people are just kind of reiterating what we're saying, you know, in the general sentiment that it's important to remember that the average person will always say that any new technology that was invented after they're born until it's widely adopted is not going to work. One of my favorite videos on the internet is where someone goes around New York in the late 90s and asks people if they could ever see themselves using a cell phone. And the vast majority of people say, you know, what on earth would I need that for? Why would I want one? I have a phone at home. There's another video where they ask people in, I believe, the late 80s about email, and they say, you know, why would I need that? I can just ring someone up on the phone. Or you can't trust instinct about which technologies are going to be widely adopted in the future. And the crazy thing that always amazes me is how, when these technologies are widely adopted, everyone acts like it was inevitable and it was always going to happen. But as you're pointing out, Ian, and as people are pointing out in the comments, even the iPhone at launch, there were some major publications and news outlets that talked about how it would never take off. And especially what it was hammered for was the keyboard. That, you know, a lot of people said, how on earth would you ever have a phone without a physical keyboard? And look at all of us today. So I think that's very important to keep that sort of coverage in mind when looking at some of the doom and gloom headlines about VR out there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alyssa. Thank you all the commenters mentioning. Our show in itself is a wonderful example of the progress that we're seeing in a very short span of time. I cannot go back and watch the original episodes with the original avatars we had. They are that uncomfortable to look at. And now these are watchable, much more so, even though I know when we make the next great leap, when hopefully these are animated with real facial movements, it's going to get harder and harder to look at the old stuff. And we thank you so much for your support. Yes, please like, comment, subscribe, share this link out to others. We should be back here hopefully next Tuesday at our normal time. But then again, as news dictates, we have to shift around the time of this sometimes. But thank you for tuning in. Please consider becoming a member and support our journalism work as we chart the future of personal computing. We will see you on the future. Thank you.